This week on the Mini PC Show, episode 64, we talk about Pyware, DiaPy, Packet Squirrel, Net Neutrality, and Rock 64. Tune in for the Mini PC Show.
Richard Hughes.
And this is Door to Door Geek with his phone not silenced.
Yes, we don't want chimes and beeps and pretty noises.
Not right now. So how's everything going, guys?
I feel like a Maker's episode is about to come out of me. I built things, I broke things, and crap just don't be working around here like I'd like it to.
This is sounding pretty juicy. Maker shows are good.
Yeah. Well, it's just not so good. It's yes and no good. So I don't know if I want to cross into too much 3D printer stuff, but after some kicking and screaming and flashing the BIOS or the firmware on my 3D printer, I got it running again. I got a couple of good prints off, and then it just went foobar. I changed material. It might be humidity is the issue. Somebody asked me to print something for them, and might be a humidity issue. And I've been playing with my Pyware, and the Pyware originally was on, it was on the bar of the Tiki Hut for about a year or two in some Gladware, and it was doing okay. And then I got the idea, I got a 10-foot piece of PVC, and I threw it on the back of my shed, which got it about 20 feet in the air. There's electrical underground run out to the shed. So I just had to have Wi-Fi coming back to the house, and I set up an access point facing from the back of the house to the shed. And then I'm like, well, if 10 feet is good, 10 feet of PVC is good, 20 feet must be better. So I put a coupler on there and put it 20 feet up. Well, it worked fine. And then I guess, somehow in Florida, I guess it does get hot and sunny and maybe occasionally windy. So I guess the PVC got to... In fiberglass, we call it the glass transition temperature, where the temperature at which the solid epoxy becomes not solid. And I came home one day and it was folded over. I'm like, crap. So I got the idea. I'm like, well, let me snake the, I don't know if it's a 30-foot, a 30-foot USB cable I have. Let me just snake that through one of the ridge vents on my house, and I'll just put the antenna on my house. Well, I find out the software-defined radio dongle. Where is it? This thing. Where's a camera that's recording? Right here. So this little doohickey is apparently temperature sensitive. So I couldn't figure out. I'm like, well, the altitude, the peak of my roof on my house is about the height that the two PVC pipes were. Like, how come I'm not seeing as many airplanes as I was before? And then I finally read that apparently the device has a couple of chips in it that are temperature sensitive. And as the temperature goes up, it sees less aircraft. I'm assuming maybe the CPU on the little dongle goes down because of the temperature or something like that. So I'm trying to figure out how to make this all work in a nice, happy way.
So what are your thoughts?
So kind of mashing up 3D printer stuff, somebody built a case so you pull the actual case off the dongle and it has a fan on it. Other people have cut holes in the case of the dongle and put fans on it. So really what I'd like to do is, because it's November and it's too hot for the dongle. So it's certainly not going to work in July and August. I'd love to get just a longer antenna cable, but it's like this micro coax with a push-in fitting. I don't know if it's an F-type. I got to look it up so I know what it is. And I'd love to get just a longer cable, like a 30-foot cable. And I don't know if the length is going to screw up with the signal, so that could be a problem also. So that's one solution is long cable, keep it low in my rafter space where it's not too hot. The other solution is put a fan on it, a big fan, a case with a fan, something like that. Another solution I'm looking at is kind of, and again, this breaks into the spousal approval on home modifications. I was kind of thinking about redneck engineering something, and I was going to put a cupola on the house, but not have, you know, a nice cupola with a weather vane would have like a copper top on it. You'd have like the rooster in the weather vane kind of thing. I don't think I'm going to go for that. What I think I want to do is build a cupola that has, you know, maybe made of, you know, PVC plastic siding and some stuff. And I'm not sure what I'm going to do for the roofing, but I want to keep it fairly penetrable for RF. And I don't want to cut holes in my roof, but they do. I know, like, you ever see satellite dishes on somebody's house and they have a couple of like pavers holding it down, weighting it down? I'm thinking it, I could build a cupola, put a couple of paver blocks, you know, one on either side, and just sit it on the ridge and then run the wires up into it for whatever one I want to run there. So if the cupola is not connected to the house and it has solar shading and ventilation, I could put the whole stinking pie and everything up there and just run power to it, and I'm good. I don't have to worry about long runs of, you know, 30-foot USB extension and, you know, anything else going on.
And how would you keep it cool?
Well, it's, I'm not going to have any active cooling on it. It's just going to be breeze coming through because the peak of my roof is fairly close to the treetop. At the surface in my neighborhood, even though I'm 10 miles straight line from the ocean, from the east coast of Florida, there's not a whole lot of wind here, not a whole lot of daily breeze. But being that there's no hole in the roof, like a lot of times what people do, they'll put a cupola type thing and that'll be ventilation. They'll put a weather vane on it. If I just throw it up there and I have it, you know, blocking this, you know, blocking whatever devices I throw in there from the sun, and I have just it adequately open, you know, slotted or slatted that air passes through it, it's not going to get that hot. And it'll be protected from rain and whatever else. And shouldn't blow off.
I would think that you'd be able to convince the missus this could be an upgrade and add appeal to the house or something like that. Because my only concern would be you're in South Florida. You better make sure that thing's on really good because, you know, once in a while you get a really strong wind called a hurricane.
We actually had three tornadoes. I think they were F0 tornadoes, so probably the lowest end tornado you could possibly get. My wife and I were at the movie theater on Saturday. Were we at a 7 o'clock movie? Yeah, 7 o'clock movie. And I could hear the of everybody's phones in the theater going off, and there were tornado warnings. And then I heard that like there's confirmed 3 F0 tornadoes touched down in Palm Beach County, which I'm assuming I haven't heard of any damage other than that they existed. So I'm assuming that was pretty light.
Wow.
But yeah, you're right. I mean, we do have, weather scares of different sorts here.
Well, it sounds like a good idea as far as keeping it out of direct sunlight. I mean, that's the killer of all things. And the cupola idea, I think, is pretty ingenious in having it a passive cool rather than an active cool.
Right.
I'm wondering, though, if you still might have a challenge with temperature because it's a humid hot. You know, it's like even though it's not in the direct sunlight, it's like an oven still.
Well, so two things. So I've been running the PioWare for a number of years, and for like 2 years, it was under the tiki hut and just sitting on the bar. So it was in the shade, and it probably never really got rained on. I mean, maybe in a hard, windy rain or so, but probably, you know, no rain. The other way, the SDR was up the tube. It was up the white PVC, but I'm not sure how hot it got in the white PVC in the middle of the summer. Maybe it didn't get too hot. So that's what I'm kind of banking on, because when the last rendition of it, just snaking it out one of the ridge vents, the TV tuner dongle was right at the vent. So however, whatever the max temperature was in the peak of the roof is what that darn thing was, which I guess was near, you know, non-functional temperature. And I'm going to do like the binars. One thing I learned from TNG, I'm just going to do it and I'm not going to ask.
It's better to ask for forgiveness than it is for permission.
Wait, I'll tell you what, we could take bets on how many weeks it will be before my wife noticed there's a cupola on the house. She'll be like, Has that always been there?
Why, yes.
Yes, it has. Are you serious? Of course it has.
And just whatever you do, don't violate the Prime Directive. I just want to take a quick moment here to give a shout out to John Hullinger.
Hullinger.
Thank you very much, Rich. He is our first Patreon. I will say, one, if you want to support this show directly, go to patreon.com/theminipcshow. He also sent us a message. It says, I wish I could do more, but every little bit counts. I enjoy all the content you put out, and I learn all the time. Please, it helps pass time while driving the big rig. Keep up the awesome work, you guys.
Oh, wow. Hey, I didn't know what John did. And thanks for the support, John. Really appreciate
Absolutely. It. Yeah, John is going over, above, and beyond. He's supporting now 4 Patreons I know of, Rich's, and 3 of them from Podnut. So, John, you don't have to worry. Your emails and your support throughout the years is more than enough. If any time life gets busy, turn off the Patreon. Take care of yourself. Take care of your family. Trust me, you support us plenty, and I want to thank you and give you a shout out. And say, because he is our only Patreon, he right now has exclusive access to watch these shows live. He got a notification roughly 10 minutes ago saying that the show is going live, and he has the ability to watch it live via Patreon. And we're working on 3D printed challenge coins, one of a kind type items that we can print for each person supporting the network and ship them out to everybody. Hopefully we'll have that done here in a couple weeks.
Oh, very
That's
cool.
That's very awesome. I do have a question, actually, for John and those that are in the trucking industry. I'm wondering, how does a mini PC benefit your line of work? So, go ahead. What do you think?
Well, I can tell you, I know at least 3 or 4 active truckers. And one of the things is mobile data is not cheap. You know what I mean? You can get unlimited internet in your house mm-hmm. all day long, but to get mobile data is not cheap. So what a lot of them do is when they get to a place that has data, they cache it. So they might stop at some place, download a bunch of content, and then when they're on the road, listen to it mm-hmm. or play it. Or when they get to the place where they're going to be for the night, they might not have data access and they want to watch a movie. So what a Raspberry Pi type device can be is you basically have it in your vehicle pre-programmed for certain Wi-Fi spots. So as soon as you hit them, it starts to download a playlist type of content, either movies or music. And I once told a guy, if you notice, your podcast numbers, download numbers start to level off at about 6 to 8 weeks is when they almost get stopped and they almost stop getting downloaded. And that's because the long haul truckers sometimes only download their shows when they get to their end point. So it literally might be weeks before they download content. And then when they do, they might download 100 wow. shows.
Oh, yeah. Cool. I never thought about that factor.
Well, I mean, they're on the road, so there's only certain times they can get certain kinds of data. Now, if you're Tracy Holtz or another high-end guy, you have like multiple phone plans on the down low cheap to where cool. you still get access everywhere you go.
Well, wait a second. Tracy Holtz didn't have good data at his house. I think he upgraded or it upgraded.
Yes, no doubt. Because at his house, he had microwave internet.
And it was metered.
And it was heavily metered, yes. So you can use a mini computer, but I will say it's the kind of thing that you have to have pre-configured heavily before you leave on your route, or else it's just going to be novelty.
Something similar to what you're talking about is I bumped into a guy, and it might be a year ago now, at Costco, and they do that on yachts, because you may, not like you're going to be out to sea for weeks, very few actually are. But you might go from one port to another, and you may have iffy Wi-Fi, and you may not be able to get movies.
Sounds just like camping. When you're camping, you want to make sure that you're bringing the right movies with you.
Right. So actually, one more thing on the PiAware that I thought was interesting, and I wanted to find more information about it, but I couldn't. there was, at 62,000 feet, just slightly offshore, a balloon floating around. And I was, somebody told me that Google was doing, you know, the balloon, the Google Loon project on Puerto Rico. Yes. And I'm wondering if it was a stray loon or what the heck. Or maybe it's just a common thing and I don't observe it that much.
Well, Puerto Rico's not really that physically close to you guys.
Nah, it really isn't. You're right about that.
I mean, it might be, but I would also not be, I wouldn't expect it to be.
Yeah, I'm wondering if it was, you know, some backyard science project or, you know, like a USGS weather balloon or, you know, something.
Spies, man. It's all the spies.
Oh, it's the, what was it? The Japanese had a balloon. Oh, I forgot what it was called. But during World War II, the Japanese were attacking California by balloon with bombs.
Hmm.
I don't know. That was a while ago before me.
Yeah, that was, I'm not that old either.
Was that Battle of Los Angeles?
Well, Kevin Spacey wasn't in it.
Oh man.
Uh-oh.
Sorry. We have a really good email here, and I will say I'm not sure what's going on with podnuts.com email. It doesn't seem to always get forwarded. I just logged in today to the actual email account itself because I have emails forwarded to my email, and I saw more than a couple emails that were just sitting there that were sent a day or two ago and never hit my inbox. And this was one of them from Richard Klein. You want to take a shot at this, Rich?
Okie doke. And, you know, I wrote Richard Klein back already, and I just, because I was thinking about him last week during Tilts, because Richard Klein is a generous kind of individual. And Dan over at Tilts had a whole bunch of equipment go bad, and Richard donated all sorts of stuff to keep the show going. So he was very generous. So the subject is Mini PC Show Inverse Giveaway. And he says, Dor, Brian, and Flying Rich, so I'm last. Banana Pro available. Whichever of you want it is welcome to my Banana Pro and SATA cables. I have two. Let's see. TLDR, I'm not sure. Is that initials too long or something? TLDR, anyhow.
Too long, didn't read.
Okay. I tried to get it going with Diet Pi and a laptop hard drive for 8 hours. Oh, boy. Some of this stuff can eat your time. And here's what drives me crazy. I keep saying I want to be an Amish man. I want to live like the Amish because sometimes the tech, just instead of making my life easier, does completely the opposite. Oh, man, and I want to talk about this on Tilts earlier, but I didn't know Google could do this. I said, okay, Google, remind me to buy brake cleaner when I go to Walmart. I pulled into the parking lot, you know, a couple days later, and it popped up. It's like, buy brake cleaner. I'm like, crap, that worked. So anyhow, so some stuff saves time, some stuff eats time. And he says, with some multi-hour gaps in between while I did other things, as I updated and installed, friggin' hate Diet Pi, which that hurts, man. And I think I could have gotten Linux from scratch running quicker with fewer problems. And that's a rough, scathing judgment. And look, I'm not saying anything about that. If your only tool is a hammer, like Diet Pi, you think everything's a nail. And I do not run exclusively Diet Pi as much as I you know, talk great things about it. Some crap don't work right on it and don't use it. Like I have an Orange Pi 0 plus 2 in Armbian seems to work best for the Wi-Fi, where I haven't tried newer versions of Diet Pi on it. But anyhow, back to his email because it's a long one. I just got a 10-pack of 5.5 millimeter by 2.1 millimeter to, oh boy, what, barrel connectors? I guess that's for the, oh, okay, that powers the Odroids. And is that a USB to whatever, did he say? Anyhow, let me know if you like a couple of these. Those are always in a 10-pack. Oh, and he gives us the eBay link. So that's cool because those are always super handy. When you have an Odroid kicking around or another device. And then he says, PodNuts feedback. And I provide some of this when I signed in for PodNuts Patreon campaign. Oh, I guess he's in the general Patreon, not the Mini PC. In order of time spent, I listened to the Mini PC show, yay us, Linux for the Rest of Us, Door to Door Geek, and or is it DDG? Is that Door to Door Geek or is it Diary of a Madman?
DDG.
And MRP. And I also enjoy DDG. Is that kissing up to the boss? Did I qualify?
You got it.
I got it? Okay. actually, I learned things about Door that I didn't know. So if there are more frequent episodes of Linux for the Rest of Us, would be number one. Uh-huh. So we would get kicked to the curb.
Wow.
But I understand Cody and Cody's work schedule and challenges. I'm interested in mini PCs in general, but it also deals as a fair amount of Linux, so I really appreciate the content. Okay. I certainly wouldn't be able to keep up with all the things going on in the single computer, in single board computers, the way you guys do. And he says, request as a Patreon contributor. And I do appreciate that because I have four Patreons, anyhow. And I ask them questions and they don't tell me anything. So, please lower the levels of the guitar chord in the Welcome to Podnuts intro. Dory, you got that?
I'm on it.
You're going to play your guitar a little quieter?
Oh, yeah. I have a guitar, sure.
I listen to the podcast in the car with lots of background noise, so I have the volume high. And I know what he's talking about when you do that. Something like the intro, outro music comes on and you're like grabbing for the volume, cranking it down. And okay, so he says, I have the volume high to make the human voices intelligible. The guitar chord is much louder and I find painful if I don't get on the volume knob and turn it down. Yep. Yeah, there's podcasts I listen to that do the same. Show notes. I do end up looking at the show notes, and I do also, actually, on the mini PC. For about 1 in 3 shows so far, I do appreciate the time you invest in them. As I noted above, I listen to podcasts while driving, so when you talk about something interesting, I follow up with the notes on the website. Even though I don't listen to Android App Addicts for some reason, I look at the notes for an episode recently, and I find I'm now spending time playing Polytopia.
Oh, yeah.
All right, so now he's digging into Diet Pie. So I guess I've led him astray, and I apologize. The long version of why I hate Diet Pie, given the rave reviews of Dora Rich, he says Flying Rich, I decided Diet Pie was the best option to put something current-ish on the Banana Pro I've had lying around and wanted to set up a media server. I don't know much about much other than, let's see, I don't do much other than install Linux and initial fiddling around when I got to it. And I bought the SATA drive cables, intending to use it with the laptop. I replaced the hard drive with an SSD. Oh, cool. Cool. Up. What do you call it? Upcycling. Setup and installing updates was slow. Not really Diet Pie's fault because the Banana Pro does not have a lot of CPU power. And, you know, when I got the Banana Pro, I thought it was like the hottest thing in the world. And I'm not sure where it is as far as CPU power.
But well, I'll just say when it launched, it was among the best. But it hasn't got a rev in nearly 2 years. Mm-hmm. So by today's standards, it's very mediocre processor.
Yeah, and would you recommend that for a media server? Or?
The only reason I suggest Diet Pie, Banana Pie Pro, sorry, is if you want a SATA connection, Gigabit NIC, IR Blaster, all on one board. If you can get by with USB 3, there are much better boards for a fairer price because the Banana Pi Pro is still a little expensive compared to other boards.
Mm-hmm. You know, I realize I'm using it for CrashPlan and a Raspberry Pi 3 is, you know, with the USB 2.0 it works perfectly fine for CrashPlan, which is going away in case people haven't. We've talked about that here, right?
Yep.
Okay. So, I got to find where I was. Okay, so after the initial update, which was required at least 3 tries to get the Wi-Fi connected, Diet Pie would not turn on Wi-Fi, and each attempt to turn it on involved a 3 to 5 minute wait while it halted, everything restarted, services. I may have installed too many things since I wasn't sure what would be the best combo for what I wanted to do. After a lot of iterations, I determined part of the issue was locale wasn't set properly. Yeah, that'll hose you up on, I think it's Plex. I know I had a BFD on that. And I did not spot where in the DietPy config this did this initially. So I tried to do it by editing things like Etsy environment without success. Yeah. Yeah. If you don't, the menu isn't glorious. It's like end curses, but it's once you know how it works, like I couldn't figure out, I would select packages and I didn't know you had to click install them afterwards on DietPy. Mm. So that was like, how does this DietPy thing work? Dor said it was great. I don't get it. So hours later, after finally getting Wi-Fi working, I tried the GUI. I had installed Mate and XFC. It defaulted to XFC. I didn't see a way to switch it on the desktop from the command line before typing startx. So I went to DietPy config for the start options and told it to use LightDM so I'd be able to pick which desktop to start. Upon rebooting, I got an error message that LightDM wasn't installed. So I went to DietPy software, discovered none of the DietPy software install tools had an option to install LightDM. Went back to the desktop, installed Synaptic so I could browse package details with a GUI, installed LightDM, and so another fail for the ease of DietPy utilities. Yeah, oh, man, sounds like he's got the worst DietPy story ever. Then I tried to access the laptop drive, FAT32 and NTFS. Partitions mounted fine, but I had Linux on encrypted partition. Double-clicking on the desktop icon for the encrypted partition brought up a prompt for the encryption password, but then gave me an error that about crypto setup not being able to map something. I decided to do the crypto setup command on the command line and type man crypto setup to refresh the memory of the arcane options. That's when I discovered DietPy does not install man command pages.
Man.
Oh, the DietPy is kicking him in the nuts, man. This is bad. This is the only Unix Linux system that I've seen in 30 years with no man page. I hate to say it, I don't use man pages. And for something that by default gives you a command line, it's criminal. You guys may have been able to do everything you've ever needed with DietPy config and other tools, but I sure wasn't able to. Oh, boy, I really feel bad. Next came 3 hours of trying to install man pages. When I was trying to scroll through search options in Synaptic, I twice had the Banana Pro lock up, black screen and unresponsive, and had to pull the plug with a bonus forced reboot due to power interruption during rainstorm. Oh, yeah, I know that. I know what goes on with that. That's why I got everything on a UPS pretty much. At the end of this, there was no man command, but there wasn't a full set of man pages. Wait, there was a man. I read that wrong. At the end, there was a man command, but there wasn't a full set of man pages. When I had the third lockup in Synaptic looking to install more of the Mate desktop tools, hoping they would deal with the encrypted partition, I decided my life was too short to deal with it anymore. And I don't need the aggravation. Maybe you guys have a more clearly defined set of things you want to do with DietPy and haven't had the continuous succession of issues that I have and spent the money and buy new hardware supported by other Debian derivatives at this point. So who wants to buy who wants a Banana Pro and SATA cables? I wrote him back, and like I said before, I thanked him for supporting Tilts because he was very generous. And I asked him if I could borrow the Banana Pro for a couple of months, and I wanted to use it for a project and give it back to him, configured any way he liked, if that worked for him.
Well, yeah, I'll happily give him money for it because of the pain and suffering he went through. I'm really sorry, Richard. The real quick thing I hope you picked up out of this was the first thing whenever you're dealing with any of these Pi devices, any of them, even the Raspberry Pi, is KISS effect. Keep it short and simple. Like the encrypted disk. When you're first trying to get Wi-Fi just to connect, you turn off all security just to see if it connects. To jump right in and try to do an encrypted disk, I can almost guarantee you it's going to be problems. Not everything that is supported on every other Linux distribution is going to be supported on every ARM-based distribution. Secondly, kind of thing, when you're in any of these specialized distributions and you don't see something you want to do in the main menu, stop using that distribution, period, right now. If you want Mate, don't try to install Mate on top of Diet Pi. Instead, try to look for a Bananian type distribution with Mate already installed. You know, that would simplify a lot of stuff. I'm actually running Bananian on my Banana Pro. I'm not running Diet Pi.
I'm running Bananian also.
And I don't know why. I can't give you a reason why, except that's what I installed on it back 2 years ago. So that's what's still running on it, kind of thing. And yeah, Diet Pi is not perfect. The only way I can tell how an application is going to run is I look through their changelog and see when the application was added to Diet Pi. If you're like at version 157 and it was put on there on version 155, it's not going to be polished. It's not going to run perfect. If it was put on in like version 112 and now you're up to 150, it should run great, install smooth and everything. But when things are initially put on Diet Pi, I have had suffering, is what I'll say, in figuring out how to get it correctly configured and running. Yeah.
The other thing I'd say about that is I'm going to contradict you a little bit, Dor. Drop down to the command line, do apt-get, and install whatever you want. Because
don't do apt-get. Never do apt-get. Do apt.
Okay, apt.
Apt-get is dead. It's being deprecated. And no man pages was something I also found out. And their justification was to keep it as small as possible because man pages are big. And I understood when I read that. At the same token, I felt exactly like you did, Richard. So what I ended up doing was having two command prompts open. One of them was SSH'd into the Diet Pi. The other one I had up and running just to do man pages because it made no sense to me. And it was like, I'm not a guru. I'm not the man that knows every command by heart. So I had to do that in order to get things done on my Raspberry Pi that's running Diet Pi.
So there you go. We just gave the man his 6 hours back. I feel horrible. I feel the pain. I've been there myself when I was trying to configure the Orange Pi Nextcloud.
Yeah, and the other thing I'll say is, and I kind of said this before, your first time doing anything on any mini computer like this is going to not work, ever. The first time is never going to work. The first time you image a card, it ain't going to work. The first time you load it and you try to get whatever you want working on it, every time I've done it, first time it never works. I got to nuke the card and start over. One of the good things about Diet Pi is you can literally do Diet Pi - restore, I believe, default maybe. And it will basically blank the card like it was a fresh install. So even if you mess it up, as long as you can connect to it, you can revert it back to a fresh like state. So it's good for hacking around, but the same token, once you start to get out of the Diet Pi ecosystem, it gets dangerous really quick. And to use it as a desktop, like installing Mate on it, I would not suggest on Diet Pi because of the age of the processor. Like loading Synaptic, I bet, is every bit of 5 minutes. Yeah, so when Rich is done with that Banana Pro, if you want, Rich, I'll happily buy it off of you. Because honestly, I need a second one so I can have like fault tolerance, dare I say, and so I can do my development on the second one. So when I get that one up and running to how I like, I can just switch over the IP addresses and have stuff working.
So Dor, just take it.
Well, I'll give him money.
Oh, I mean, you know, I don't need it then. I got the M3 here. I can do the project I was thinking about.
Well, it'll probably take me 2 weeks to publish this, so he might have already shipped it to me. Because I am perpetually behind. And any listeners out there, if you want to harass me once a week around Thursday, send me an email and say, where's my mini PC?
Like I used to do.
Like anybody can do. Yeah. I don't think we have any more emails. Could be mistaken, and if you know you sent an email that you want read on the show and we're not reading it, don't hesitate, send it to us again. Did you guys have any links in the notes that you saw were interesting?
566. So it looks like there's going to be more rock chips out there, or single board computers with rock chips. So the Rock 960 board is, let's see, can't just read the title here. So it has a 40-pin header, so it doesn't look like it's Raspberry Pi sized. It might be slightly larger. and the ports are on the long side as opposed to the short side. So this ROC 960 is going to have an RK, let's see, 3399.
Hexa-core. Wow. And with a true dual core ARM Cortex A72 up to 1.8 to slash 2.0 gigahertz on the one, and on the second one, 1.4. So it's going to have a high speed and a low speed. Four cores for high speed, four core for slower speed. It also has, it says PCIe 2.1. Wow.
Yeah, I see it right there.
That must be that long ribbon. And honestly, I really like the fact that it has USB Type-C and USB 3.
But what connector does it have on the USB Type-C?
I
don't know the connector names.
Neither do I.
Because the Note 8 has, it looks like the female version of what the Apple USB-C is, but it isn't.
More importantly, what speeds are we getting with the USB-C?
It looks like, it says Type-C port with DP 1.2 support, which I have no clue what that is. It looks like that might be the power port. The USB-C might be the power port.
I've seen a lot of manufacturers doing that.
And I'm okay with that. I don't think that's a bad thing.
So, okay, it's got a USB 1, a USB 2, one USB 3.
That DP 1.2 is DisplayPort.
So is there, it says HDMI on it also. So you're saying you could run two monitors off this board?
I'm not going to say yes, but that's exactly what it's sounding like, and I'm
wrong. How cool is that?
The power supply says 8 to 18 volt DC input.
I love that.
Oh, there it is on the lower right-hand side of the picture. That's a barrel jack connector, I guess. Okay, wow. So it has real USB 3, real USB Type-C with display port potential. Wow. Okay, I'm interested. Did they have my attention?
Next question is, how much?
Yeah. I don't. Oh, below. They say hopefully below $100. Yeah. Okay. That doesn't make me feel warm and fuzzy. I mean, how many gigs of RAM? Better have three or four. Two or four gigs of RAM. So 4 gigs of RAM, I could see spending 70 to 80-ish. If you actually can hook up HDMI to a monitor and then the Type-C, you can actually split out to even like two other monitors, so three total. That would be crazy. And I don't understand the four lanes, M.2, PCIe, 2.1. I don't even understand that.
2 gigabit bandwidth.
I'm
assuming that's a PCIe standard. I don't know a whole lot about that.
I don't either, but man.
That's so is there no Cat 5 on this? Or
no,
is
I don't see any.
No.
Yeah, there is no Cat 5 on it.
Nope. So I guess that's going to mean you're going to have to use a either a Wi-Fi dongle or some kind of a USB hub or dedicated dongle.
Or that's what you're going to use the PCIe board for.
Hmm. And it does say that it already supports Ubuntu, the Yocto project, which I never heard of, and Armbian. And I will say Armbian is one of those mini PC distros that is definitely performance based. If you have to have the best possible visual performance, you know, like desktop performance out of any mini computer, look to see if Armbian is available for it. It does seem to be a little bit better.
That's pretty cool. I don't know if I'm going to run out and buy something like that. I'd be, you know, if they sent us a, you know, trial, but...
don't hold your breath,
Rich. Yeah, right? We're not that popular yet?
I don't know if we'd ever be, tell you the truth. I'll say this one's going to be on my radar at least. If it goes on sale, it would be nice to get one, especially if that USB-C can actually hook up to multiple monitors. That could be pretty cool. And it does say it supports... 16 or 32 gig eMMC as well, plus a micro SD card. It does say it has built-in Bluetooth. Okay.
Yeah, Bluetooth Wi-Fi. And Wi-Fi.
Yeah. Okay, so that's better. So you can at least get Wi-Fi without spending more money. Interesting board. This is the kind of stuff I like seeing, even if it's not for me. At least people keep innovating and keep pushing more hardware on. And I'll say every time we see one of these, I'm going to say it again, people. Raspberry Pi, They somebody tried to say from the Raspberry Pi Foundation they were going to get out of the hardware game altogether and focus on software. I hope that was a joke.
Yeah, I hope so too.
Mm. Because
they don't do software that great, I'm just going to say.
It's
all about the hardware.
The hardware is open source, right?
No.
No, it's not?
That's one of the key lies people keep promising.
Well, I thought it was.
No. The graphics chip on it has open specs. So what Broadcom did, the guy who originally did this board work for Broadcom, Broadcom gave him permission to put this graphics chip on the Raspberry Pi. And it is a really good graphics chip. Let me just say that right now. Hell of a good graphics chip, but it's closed source. So what they did was they gave open specs. They said, here's all the APIs going in and out of the actual driver. And that helps a lot. Without that, I mean, the board would not be as far as it is today. So that alone did help a lot. But if you take it to an open person, you take it to a Richard Stallman, you take it to a Mad Dog Jod Hall, they will tell you it's not open.
Uh-huh.
This is why there's still no officially supported Android on it, because you need the graphics driver in that to work right. And people have been hacking around to get it to work, but there is no official version yet. And supposedly Google was going to release a version of Android specifically for the Pi. I will say if they did that, there will be probably no better Android device on the market.
Right.
That hasn't happened.
Yeah, I've seen Chrome OS running on the Pi and it looked pretty decent.
Yeah. I mean, Chrome is just Linux with, you know, a very light desktop on it. I want to say it's LXQT. Mm-hmm. I can't remember. It's a very light, hollow desktop on it with just a browser on it. So that should be doable, and it should run fine. With anything, though, browsers today are very demanding. Once you open up one or two links with, 20-plus meg web pages, because web page developers now load up their stuff, you are going to experience slowdown more than on a Chromebook, and people complain about Chromebooks. So if, as long as you're single tab browsing, you'll probably have a fine experience. Not great, but probably very acceptable.
You know what hardware is open source, Rich, is the Arduino. I believe that is open source hardware.
I thought the Orange Pis were open source, but it might be the same thing with the driver graphics chips. I'm not sure.
No, most of the other boards we talk about are completely open.
Okay.
Like the Banana Pis, the Banana Pi Pros are completely open. The Odroids are mostly open. I think the XU4 is not completely open because it has a Samsung processor on it. But most of the other boards we talk about are completely open. But because of that, their graphics chips aren't as, in air quotes, good. So they don't run everything as smooth as a Raspberry Pi can. It's a hit and miss kind of game with graphics on these devices. Where the software being optimized for the hardware is in some cases more important than the hardware itself.
Well, how many Pi devices, single board computers, are you actually running a UI on?
I will say it seems to be the first thing people want to do.
Okay, and I'm corner case on everything because I SSH into everything.
Yeah, and... on one of my devices, I'm always running Android as the family computer.
Mm-hmm.
So that one, I say. I always try to carry one back and forth to work and use that as a mobile desktop. So I have two of them running that. But then I always have the Raspberry Pi running Octoprint. That's not a GUI. Mm-hmm. I have my Banana Pro running my own cloud. That's not a GUI. And for a while there, I had my Nano Pi Neo running Node-RED, which is not a GUI.
Yeah, but the Nextcloud or OwnCloud, I mean, you have a web interface, and same thing with the Octoprint.
Mm-hmm. Yep, but so it's a web interface, not a full desktop GUI.
Right. And your OctoPi is what Pi?
Raspberry Pi 3.
Oh, wow. I'm running a 0. You're way over killing it. Although it probably boots quicker and loads quicker.
Well, and that's the goal. I want to make sure, and because I'm getting a really bad wireless signal in there, so I don't want to risk it. I want to make sure that there's processor cycles to spare.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, was there anything else you guys saw in the notes that you wanted to bring up? We talked about the ROC chip, but the one thing I wanted to talk about real quick was line 569, the ROC 64. When the ROC 64 came out, we had the Pine 64, then they did the little mini chip computer that's the EPS 2688-like collecting. Then they had the Pine Book. Then they had the Rock 64, and people were worrying about spreading themselves too thin. They're not going to be able to do stuff. Well, if you go to the main page, you can see for software alone, they have 8 different versions of Android. 2 of them are TV, Android TV. 6 of them are stock builds of Androids. Then you have Debian, Jesse, LXDE, Debian, Stretch Minimal, Debian, Jesse Minimal, Ubuntu Mate with for EMMC, Ubuntu Minimal, Libra Elect with Kodi, Jesse with Open Media Vault, Jesse with Open Media Vault for the EMMC. They have a i3 version of Ubuntu. They have DiaPie. They have Volumino, V-O-L-U-M-I-N-O, and Fedora, and they have Source OS images. So they went a little overboard with the types of OSs you can run on the Rock 64, which honestly, I'd rather have too many to pick from than not enough.
Wow, that is super.
Yeah, so apparently this is a board that a lot of people wanted and a lot of people got, and there's been a lot of development on already, because I believe I've had mine less than 45 days, and to already have this number of OSs on it is legitimately mind-blowing, is what I'm going to say. When I did load the i3 desktop, I will tell you, I loaded up a browser window, and the entire window, the Chrome and everything, was not working. It was basically just a black box. And I could stretch it, I could open it, I could make it smaller, bigger, I could minimize, I could maximize, and it would never display right. I'm guessing that had something to do with hardware acceleration and the video driver. When I loaded regular Mate, it worked okay. I got a browser, it ran fine. So there's now more for me to play with, more for me to try. The last one I tried was the Android TV. It worked okay, but I couldn't get Netflix to install on it for some reason. So we're going to leave a link in the notes to the wiki.pine64.org for the Rock 64. So you can see all the different OSs, and it goes over the system on a chip specifications of the hardware, the GPU, and the RAM, and a couple other little things.
Wiki. Got to have it on a wiki.
Oh, yeah. So far, I'm still really happy about it. It was slightly expensive for what you get, but for being the early guy in version 1, I don't mind paying.
No, I think the hardware specs are fabulous. I really do. This thing looks amazing compared to the Raspberry Pi. But as you were saying with the Netflix having an issue with Android TV, I was poking around on the interwebs, and a lot of folks were having some issues with Android. Just getting apps from the App Store, having the App Store itself running smoothly. So definitely mileage may vary, it seems like. But I think you hit it on the head with the majority of them.
Yeah, I'm going to try to get Netflix on it again if I can. I'm going to try to load the normal Android, see if I have better experiences. I'm comfortable with side-loading APK files, because what I'll do is I'll literally back it up from one device I own and put it on that device. So I don't have to worry about going out to the public internet and getting hacked or compromised APK files.
Amen.
All right, Dor, I got to ask you, what is now line 569? Are you telling me that's an Intel-based? It's Apollo Lake mini PC.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. This is on CNX software, the Melee, M-E-L-E, which I've owned more than a couple Melee devices. They're fair. They weren't fantastic, but they were fair. Melee PCG35. They've actually had this on their site a couple times when they were talking about running Windows on it and the performance that they were seeing out of that. This is a posting of how they got Linux to install on it. They did say there was a little bit of trickery to get it installed, but once they got it installed, they were pretty satisfied with the result of it. I'm going to take a look at the video here on the live stream.
Where's the device?
I think you have to go back to the first page.
Yeah, it's it looks like one of those super small PCs in a box with an antenna. You know, where the antenna is the length of the box.
Oh,
almost.
Okay.
So I'm looking at GearBest. It's $267.
Yeah, whenever you put the word Intel on any box, you're going to immediately see a definite price increase.
But it's got USB-C. Yeah. It's got Type-C. It's got a VGA port.
Yeah, and it looks like in the video, he's literally doing it on a damaged monitor. There's a huge thick line going down his monitor. Yeah, 4 gigs of RAM. 4 gigs of RAM on an Intel chip is very usable for a Linux desktop. For Windows these days, I personally think you got to have at least like 8.
I agree. And 64 gigs of memory, not 32.
Of a hard disk, the internal
storage.
It's
eMMC.
Yeah, I will say anything under 50 with a Windows install, and you're just planning for failure because sooner or later that disk is going to fill up with Windows updates.
Lessons learned. Been there, done that. Never again.
Yeah, and I'll say like one key performance indicator or KPI in my book when I'm watching this video when he's showing the desktop is when YouTube is running and he's moving his mouse, the mouse looks perfectly smooth. I've experienced some of these mini computers when I start to play a YouTube video, the mouse will literally become a little jagged.
Jerky.
Or when you scroll up and down while the video is playing. Yeah, it looks pretty good.
Yeah, so that really does look like a pretty good device. Under 300 for an Intel device, I would say, is a expectable price. You know, whenever you put the word Intel in front of something, in my opinion.
Someone's trying to make a little money.
Well, you know, you'll have that. And to be honest, it's a decent looking device. Melee doesn't make ugly computers. I'll say that.
Speaking of ugly computers, Blind 570. I was stumbling on the interwebs. I like saying that's my new word for today, interwebs. I was fumbling around on the internet, and I came across an older Kickstarter that was completely funded. Oh my gosh, this was like back in 2013. And if you look at line 70, this gentleman, I feel really bad for him, is Jay Pearson is his name. He came up with a really classy-looking design, at least from a 2013's perspective, and I think even in 2017 it still stands up the test of time. It's all aluminum, like a circle flat case.
Hockey
it's got a hockey puck. For the Raspberry Pi, and it's such a simple, straightforward, unique design where it has
very Mac-like.
Yeah, very Mac-like, and it's got all the cables coming out of one side. And
yeah, you designed the internals on the case so you can plug in, and all the cables come out one side, so it's not a mess, not an octopus.
Right, it's totally simple, straightforward the way he does it.
And then he's got a stackable module for the hard drive, which is nice,
and an on and off button. Turn the device on and off.
You had me an on and off button.
I don't think he could keep up with demand. Looking through the comments and the notes, where's my stuff? You know, he tried to innovate a little bit. We know when the changes came with the Raspberry Pi as we started to get some new models on board. And he couldn't keep up. He could not keep up with the demands. And he just got a lot of bad reviews. So even to this day, I'm trying to figure out does he have a separate website other than this Kickstarter where you can actually order it? What's he doing nowadays? I can't find anything. And I feel bad. I feel bad for Jay. I feel bad for you. Even though you met your Kickstarter demand, I think this could have been a much more successful product than it turned out to be.
Where's the commentary on it?
If you go to the page in the link notes on the far right-hand side underneath campaign, frequent asked questions, updates, you'll have comments and community.
He's got a website, buildthespin.com.
That is a good-looking case.
But it's polished aluminum. I mean, not only is it machined, it's got to, you know, be polished to get that finish.
He's definitely got a craft. I gotta hand it to him.
But yeah, and I'll put it like this. Knowing what I know, which is absolutely nothing, you watch one episode of Shark Tank, and they tell you the hardest thing is the supply line. Mm-hmm. If you don't have that figured out, you cannot be successful. So when that happens, you only have one choice, which is to make sure you manage people's expectations. Back in Kickstarter early days, I'll say, it was very easy to go in and set a pledge and said, if you give us this amount, you'll get this reward. But nobody set a limit. Like maximum 20, 30, 40, or 50. So once in a while, people would get insanely overwhelmed with hundreds of orders when they're thinking, I don't know how I'm going to do this.
Right.
So I'm going to guess that was part of what happened. He has a good idea. CNCing is expensive. Well, I'm learning is expensive, does take time, is not easy. You can't rush it. You can't do it fast without crazy expensive hardware, like big machines.
Right. Oh, yeah.
So this is the kind of case where if he went with the high-tier market, which is to say, don't, you know, make a limited number of them, charge a premium price. The people that want it will pay that price. Then when expectations die down a little bit, then you can start producing a little bit quicker with outside support and charge a little bit less. But yeah, I mean, right now, if this thing was available, by the looks of it, I wouldn't mind having one at all.
Yeah, it's gorgeous.
So he's got a Twitter page that, so he joined in April 2013. He has 8 tweets, 24 following, 33 followers, and his last tweet was the 7th of May, 2014.
Was he telling people to leave him alone?
I guess so.
Successfully funded, my number one goal, production and shipped to my backers. Yeah. I don't mean to be too much of a jerk, but it seems like he would have had a lot more communication if everything was going good.
I fully agree with you.
And Dory, I'm not trying to attribute any malice to the individual. I'm sure he had a great idea. I'm sure a lot of people liked it. People probably told him, I'd like one of those. Can you make that for me? And then somebody said, why don't you start a Kickstarter? And that's as far as he thought.
Yeah.
That's a shame. Like I said, I feel bad for him. Awesome idea. Just, I wish I could get one myself.
Yeah, well, now they're extra limited, so they're worth even more.
Right.
Okay, I'm looking through the comments now. I didn't see where the links were.
Yeah, I really like...
I still haven't received my cases.
Yeah. Well, I'll say this. Anybody who pledges to a Kickstarter, then screams about not getting their thing, completely doesn't understand what Kickstarter is. Which is why I say you really have to manage expectations. Nobody's perfect at it. And unfortunately, after you do it once, then you start to understand why it's important. Keep them expectations low so you can overperform, overdeliver. Okay, one I wanted to bring up, actually, we didn't bring up in the last show, number 560. And the only reason I'm bringing this up is because I'm a nerd, and this really tickled my nerd bone, if I had one. I have a Nintendo Switch. My kids love the Nintendo Switch. They won't put it down. I now hold it over their heads as blackmail on things. You want to play the Switch when you get home? Get a good day at school. I have no problem saying that. I don't have time to play it, really, so I only play it maybe 2 or 3 hours a month at most. This caught my eye. Somebody took basically the form of a Nintendo Switch, 3D printed everything, built the controllers from scratch himself, and he put a Raspberry Pi in it to play retro games. So it's definitely thicker than a Nintendo Switch, but it gives you the same feels, in air quotes, of a Nintendo Switch, and then you have a screen with all your games on it. And the screen on the Switch isn't hard to get better than. It's not a high-end screen. I think it only does 1080p.
That's fine.
And anything retro that's superior than anything you need. And he actually 3D printed on the back of the case the actual Nintendo Switch logo. So if the wrong person sees them, they're going to think it's a genuine Switch for at least a second.
I'm just watching the... Okay.
Yeah, and if you... Yeah, I was going to say, if you watch the video, he basically, in super sped up, shows you the entire build process.
Yeah, I was going to comment on that. He's definitely got some craft going on here. A lot of skills.
Yeah, skills on a lot of stuff, not just
the physical. Oh, boy, that's a lot
printing.
Of wire.
Oh, it is. But he handles it like a champ. Oh, man, the batteries and all the wiring. God, this guy, that's passion. That's the only thing I can say. Yeah, because the easiest thing is to load the OS on the Pi and load the games on it.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I can't imagine the amount of hours that went into this. I literally cannot imagine the hours that went into this. But with that said, how much would he have to charge for this? I'm gonna lean back on that same guy with the Kickstarter. Right. How much would he have to charge for this to make this economically feasible for him to do?
You can't. You know, that's like I want to help people do fill in the blank. Or, you know, I as a service. But I'm like, I wouldn't be able to charge them what I'm worth, and they wouldn't be able to pay for me. And, yeah, you none of that was just snap in and go. It wasn't plug a ribbon cable from this to that. He's, you know, got a bunch of wires. He's soldering. He, you know, very, very craftsman-y. And I always got to compare that back. Think about when, and I don't know if any of you had the 4.77 megahertz PC that was $2,000. I'm looking for Brian's nod or not.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Okay.
Mine, I think, was a 466.
Mm-hmm.
Can't remember.
So we're, even when you consider inflation, like, so that 4.77 megahertz computer, and that was, you paid $2,000 just for the thing in the box, not the monitor, not the keyboard, right. And it didn't have a mouse, didn't have a motor,
OS,
didn't connect to the internet. You had 5 1/4 floppies that you had to swap out, you know, insert floppy into a drive. Now, you know, somebody like me complains bloody murder. I got a 2012 MacBook Pro and it's like $2,600. And I'm like, oh, that's an awful amount of money, blah, blah, blah. And look, when you handcraft something like that, you got to expect, in the cheapest thing in it is the components. The most expensive thing is his time.
Yeah. I hate saying the terms small batch, locally sourced, handcrafted, but it's all those things.
Right.
Yep. If you go back to his page, it says it cost him roughly $350 to make, and that does not include the Raspberry Pi that he broke trying to shave down the sides to make it fit in a tighter spot. I'm sure with repetition, with professional equipment, with a team of people, he could probably get that price down to, let's just be generous and say, $230. He would still then have to charge $330 in order to make it worth his while. And yeah, that's a low number. That's a definitely low number.
And for what's that price, the switch cost?
$300.
Ah, jeepers.
So, yeah. It helps when you're a big, huge company that can dictate what you're going to spend and you literally buy hundreds of thousands of stuff at a time. But yeah, this, man, this is definitely a work of passion that I got to say. Yeah. This guy gets a lot of credit.
His name?
I knew you were going to ask that. Tim Lundquist. Lindquist, L-I-N-D-Q-U-I-S-T.
We should have a bell. Awesome. A bell for those with craft. Hats off to you, Tim.
Yeah, definitely. If there was a hidden star of this episode, I'd definitely say it's Tim.
And good video production on his part.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that takes time and effort too, as well.
Rich knows that for a fact.
Are you commenting on my video production?
I'm commenting on my lack of video production because that stuff is hard work, man.
You know, it's a lot of effort. It really is the gigo. You know, you garbage in, garbage out, and, you know, you get what you put into it, the level of effort. Right. And here's the other thing. There's a lot of videos that I've shot that'll probably never hit YouTube just because I've lost interest in them, and I lose interest in stuff fast. So a lot of times I'll do a live feed on something. Mm-hmm. So I know it gets out there.
Right. One more thing I wanted to bring up really quick, because Brian mentioned it before, line 558. Again, this is from a previous episode we didn't get to. Mixed reality, which I still hate that term. It's augmented reality. I don't understand why all of a sudden mixed reality became the right word.
Buzz. But
I guess it is. Mozilla. You're right. Mozilla is working on full mixed reality compatibility in the web browser. Okay. I mean, right now today, you can play Doom, Quake, all kinds of games that would require complete dedicated hardware. You would have to reboot the OS into a dedicated operating system mode in order to play these games because they were so demanding. Now you can just play them in the browser. Mixed reality is not something anything should take lightly. It is extremely processor intensive and resource intensive, and Mozilla is working on the web VR API into Firefox in order to bring mixed reality right into the browser. Mind blown.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, you have Microsoft working on their web VR in Edge, and Mozilla is working on web VR and API. I'll say this, the only way I see virtual reality becoming a staple in technology, becoming a hallmark where it's going to be everywhere and people are going to use it for all kinds of things, is with more of these kind of companies trying to compete in it. And I'm going to say it like this. Mozilla doesn't seem to be able to win anything they compete in. I say that and I love them and I use them on a bunch of stuff and I support them monetarily, but they never seem to win anything. But them just stepping foot in the space drives enough competition, forcing everyone else to step up their game enough to where this might be the thing that helps make VR long-term kind of thing. I don't know.
All right, I'm going to ask you a question. I've seen these ads, like it, whatever the ad space is in my browser, it pops up every time. What the heck is Packet Squirrel?
I have no idea.
That's line 559.
Packet Squirrel.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Packet Squirrel is a Hack 5 thing. Once you hear Hack 5, you have to understand it is of questionable legality. Okay. It has the tagline... Packet Squirrel, the man in the middle that's nuts for networks. Okay, so this can be one of, I think, three different things. This can either be a hub, a gateway, or it can deliver payload.
Looks like a tap.
It is teeny. Yeah. I will say that. It is not big.
It looks half the size of a Raspberry Pi.
This is...
It's I'd say, close to the size of Raspberry
Pi. I think I can use something like this.
I'll just say this is the kind of thing, if you use it, your job, you will get fired if you don't have extremely documented support to use it. There's a physical switch on the side that can switch the different modes. You can pre-package payloads on it, so you just basically connect to a network and wham, it will look for devices it can compromise and inject payloads on. Or you can just use it as a private VPN. Yeah, yeah, that's the other thing you can do. You can hook your device up to it and then hook it up to either a wireless network or to a wired network, and it can act as a dedicated VPN. So all your traffic would go through a VPN tunnel and be safer. All right. Or you can, you know, dump some scripts on some boxes and get shell and go to town like you're in a bad...
$59.99.
That's a pretty sweet price for what this thing can
all
do.
All right, so... Here's something man in the middle-ish that I've experienced. I have hit my 1 terabyte monthly limit, which I guess was last month. And the Comcast would pop up in the middle of my browser and tell me I get 2 freebies on the 1 terabyte. And after that, you know, when I blow my monthly limit, they're going to charge me X amount, you know, for a gigabyte afterwards. And They're injecting in my stream.
What do you mean? They're injecting what?
They're injecting that notice. It pops up in the middle of my webpage.
Oh, I gotcha.
Well, I'll say the devil's advocate is they're not injecting anything into your stream. You're using their stream, and they're just notifying you of your
Correct.
And I'll say this. Neither of you are right. And it's the kind of thing, I hate saying this, but ISPs are potentially the most dangerous institution when it comes to internet privacy.
Oh, yeah.
Easily tenfold than anything else ever thought of, created, or available right now. Your HOA, your cell phone provider, the people who make your cell phone, none of them see as much of you as your home ISP. And that's honestly the people who also have the most money to make. Because with 4K TV coming right around the corner, everyone's usage is going to increase by tenfold.
Oh, yes.
Well, I may have said this on this show before, but I've had this conversation with my congressman. I think it was earlier this year. We talked. My wife and I were at a Tea Party meeting, and we knew a friend of the congressman. Well, that night, he called us. You know, he called my wife, and she had an issue. I forgot what her issue was. And then, you know, super nice guy. I'll give him a plug. My congressman is Brian Mast. And I was talking to him about the internet privacy. I hate the names. If I would fix one thing, there's a number of things. Don't get me wrong. This wouldn't be number one. but I wouldn't allow them to give something a name. Because if there was a bill in Congress called To Love and Care for Puppies, there would be a wood chipper involved in it. You know, there.
Yeah. Well, yeah, they would add a rider that we're going to kill one out of every 10 kids. And
right.
Just because it's called something cute and fluffy, people think, well, I have to support it.
Right.
So it, you know, along with one of these, what's the internet law?
Net neutrality.
Net neutrality. Yeah.
Which ain't a law, but so I knew where you were going.
He's saying, oh well, it puts the ISP on the same level as Google or Facebook, and I said, no, it doesn't. I said, I have the opportunity to opt out or decide what I share with Facebook or right. Google. The ISP sees all of my traffic. And it's not so much when we consider of us that work in the IT world, and I've worked at hospitals and all that bit, you got to worry about HIPAA compliance. There's all sorts of data protection compliances that we have to work with, and also just the metadata thereof. So what if I'm... How are they going to apply those laws to the ISP? So if I'm looking for Parkinson's medication, or if I'm looking for, it's not their business. It's illegal for them to have that information. And forget about if I'm, you know, looking for some various, you know, product that's not legal in the U.S., or if I'm visiting some sort of political site that's not legal or not whatever, not moral or not ethical. But there's so many things that are, you know, covered under HIPAA, et cetera, that, hey, you know what? It's none of their business, and I can't opt out of using, you know, in my case, Comcast.
Well, I would have asked him what gives them the right beyond, you know, what gives them the actual them
better,
right to be on the same level as
better
a Google
question,
or Facebook.
Dork. Thank you.
Because they're not. You don't have a choice but to use your ISP in some insanely high number. 88% of all people have no choice but to use one carrier if they want maximum speed.
Correct.
Kind of thing. I know where I'm at, I technically could go Comcast or Fios. I know I'm in that camp, which is not many people out there. And the good thing is, because of that, they have competing speeds, where if I lived, you know, 5 miles in that direction or 5 miles in that direction, I would only have the choice of one or the other, and I wouldn't have the high speed that I have.
Right. There's no speed right battle.
Right. So, I mean, them saying they should be on the same field as them, I would ask, why do they even feel like they deserve the right? Are they offended by, you know, Google and Facebook's success and it isn't fair?
Well,
I mean,
I'm not paying Google or Facebook anything. I am paying my ISP to deliver a product. And for them to, you know, the common saying is with, you know, Facebook or Google, the product is you. You know, what Google and Facebook is making money on is
right.
you. Whereas the Comcast is making money and not specifically Comcast, any ISP, they're making their money providing services to me. And now they're going to be marketing me.
Well, they want to make it both ways.
Right.
Portugal's wireless provider just enacted a thing where you can pay $5 extra a month and then have unlimited access to like a channel. But this channel would include social networks, or this channel would include YouTube, or this channel would include, you know, this other type of service kind of thing. That's what happens when you don't have free and open, completely free and open accessible internet, and you have high speed lanes and you have toll lanes on it. The ISP to me is the one. I'm a firm believer in free market, free trade, you know, letting the money decide what market succeeds and fails. But at the same token, I'm almost to the point where everyone should have basic home internet access for nothing.
Let's be honest. The freedom is an illusion. I mean, it really is. Nothing's free.
Well, true freedom is, yeah.
We're giving them all kinds of information on what you do, where you go, how long you stay. It's ridiculously commoditized. But
I looked up my gym, and it's kind of creepy. You know, I go to Google, I look up my gym, and I'm like, you know, it's busiest between 6 and 9 p.m. I'm like, well, how do they know that?
Like, exactly.
They know that because all of these devices are saying, hey, I'm here.
That's right. Google's kind of doing the same. They were slapped on the wrist the hand browser for doing pretty much the same thing as the ISPs, where when you're searching for content, they're pushing their own content before some of the other paid content. I mean, everyone's kind of guilty of doing certain things like that. What I don't like is that, I pay ISP X amount of dollars, and when I go to their email page to get my email, online email, now I'm being forced to look at ads, heavily forced to look at ads. And I'm going to mention one that I was just on last 2 weeks ago. It was CenturyLink. Now, my mom has CenturyLink, and I was at her, at her computer helping her out, and you couldn't believe how many ads that she was forced to get. And I got on the phone for another reason with CenturyLink, and I asked them, why am I paying you money for my internet service when you're forcing me to look at ads that I can't get out of? Can you fix that? There's nothing we can do, sir. I'm very sorry for your
Well, here's my core belief about how America is ran right now, and that is the big companies dictate everything, including how laws are written and how things are handled. But cable providers, content providers are seeing an incredible decrease in number of new households getting their complement of services. They're only getting access to the internet. They're not getting the TV service. So they're seeing a reduction in their bottom line. For the shareholders, the only thing that matters is the bottom line. So they have to figure out ways to make up that difference. So they're trying to make money on both ends. They're trying to charge us for content. And then they want to turn around and say, Google, if you want the highest speed access to our network, you're going to have to pay us. Are they wrong in doing that? If I was a shareholder, no, I would say they're not doing it wrong. They're doing it right. But as a user, I don't understand why do both sides have to pay in this arrangement? You're already getting money from one side. If the problem is you're not getting enough money from one side, then make your service better and charge more for it, or have availability of tiers. And the tiers I want are speed tiers, not quantity tiers. You know what I mean?
So I want to tell a CenturyLink story. I've done two contracts for CenturyLink, one on site in Monroe, Louisiana, and that's where it started. And CenturyLink was CenturyTel. It started out as a small telephone company in the Louisiana area. It wasn't specifically Monroe. I forget what town it was, but, met a lot of people in Monroe, Louisiana, and, some people from the flying community there I still keep in contact with and see on a fairly regular basis. Glenn Post is the president of CenturyLink. And if you, it didn't happen to me, but if you're in the cafeteria, they have, it's like a food court cafeteria in Monroe, Louisiana at the CenturyLink. It's unbelievable. The quality of food and how super cheap it was. It wasn't thin diet food, though. If you were sitting alone in the CenturyLink cafeteria and Glenn was coming down for lunch, he'd sit next to you and talk to you. And very, if you're an employee there in Monroe, and I can only talk about Monroe, Louisiana. Great company, great people, super nice, super friendly. If you told Glenn Post that, what you just, the person on the phone you talk to, he'd be like, really? We got to look into this.
Wow, that's awesome.
But you're not going to get to it. Unless you're sitting there alone and he comes down for food.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what it's going to take for stuff to change. The companies are going to get their money out of us in the end. The only question is how they're going to do it. Are they going to get it out of both ends? Are they going to get it out of us? Are they going to try to say, federal government, you need to come save us, like other industries have done? I don't know.
Yeah, the federal government, they're seeing the dollar signs too as well, and they want a piece of that streaming pie.
Well, and they want a couple other countries have, which is the internet kill switch. If there's something going down that they don't want people communicating with each other, they're going to turn it off. There was a light scandal about 3 years ago where they found out that baked into iPhones was the ability for cops to enter a riot zone, press a secret button, and disable all iPhone accessing the internet over 4G, 3G for like a 5-city block radius. It was quietly turned off. It didn't get mass attention, but the government always likes being safer in what they do, and they love control and the ability to say, well, if stuff goes haywire, we need to turn it off. And right now, ICANN just got moved out of the U.S., which was a big hit to how U.S. controls the internet. The DNS servers, there's 13 main ones, and I believe right now there's only one or two left in the U.S., which the government really doesn't like. They would love to be able to say, we want to take this domain out of existence because whatever reason they give, but that looks like it's going to be harder to happen as well. So the internet is becoming more global and more open, but you do have certain countries that basically have firewalls at their borders. There's, I want to say now, like six countries where they completely block some websites, some domains, and Google puts specific servers in certain countries where certain things are not searchable. Right.
Because you don't want podnets getting everywhere.
Yeah, so in some ways it's actually getting better. In some ways it's getting a hell of a lot worse.
No.
Yeah.
I see the speed's getting better. That's about it.
Well, and out of the world, country speed, we're still ranked like, I want to say it was 13.
I can't imagine that. I just find that so hard to believe. Well, and unless they're averaging in, you know, middle of nowhere Wyoming or something like
they
that.
They are. They are. Well, yeah, it has to be an average speed of the U.S. That's what it is, because they're averaging the other countries. The excuse is, well, we're so spread out, so it's really difficult. And to a point, they're right, but to a point, I mean, I would like to be able to live anywhere in this country and get decent internet. I'm not going to say gigabit speeds, but that would be nice. But I would like to be able to move to any part of this country that I wish. It's a quick tangent. The thing I like about this country, each state is set up to have its own set of certain types of rules and laws. So if you're a firm believer in X law, you can live in X state where they have that law. Whether it be you want prostitution, you want unlimited guns, whether you want unlimited herbal remedies kind of thing, there's a state you can go to where you can be satisfied. But I also would like to be able to say, I want to go to this state and get acceptable internet speeds, because like certain parts of Idaho, Montana, Wyoming, you're not getting good speeds.
You'd be surprised. There's folks in Florida still getting 10 megs with DSL, and they're getting robbed.
Yeah,
it's just,
I would have to move. I told the wife, I said, look, I don't care. We're going to end up moving again, just a matter of when. When we do, I only have a couple of rules. One, I got to be able to get a phone signal where I'm at. Two, I got to get good internet speed. But three, I really would like a circle driveway. Maybe. That's just so we never have to back out of a driveway, but I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah, but then the kids are going to be parking in the circle driveway, and you're still going to have to go around them.
Nope, I feel very confident. I'll put this link in the notes. Comma AI, George Hotz, the original hacker who was the first guy to break open the iPhone and jailbreak it. He was then the first guy to hack open the PS3. He is the guy who is going to push other companies to do the right thing when it comes to automated driving. He believes he's going to be at level 4. Level 4 is fully autonomous drivability. He thinks he's going to be able to get there in about 3 years. He believes in the fourth year, it's going to start to spread. Every year, he's seeing a tenfold increase in supporters running his software. Right now, there's 99 people running cars with full level 2 controllability on their cars inside the U.S. He said he's already spoken to insurance companies. He knows what they want. He knows what they need. He knows what to tell them. So they sign off, and then it becomes fully invested. And he believes by year 5 or 6 from now.
And he's hiring.
So 2022 to 2023 kind of time, we're going to have full level four vehicles on the road, side by side with people driving. That, he said, is going to happen no matter what. And yeah, right now he has a team, I want to say, of
12 people, I think.
Yeah, 12. And he said he is going to plan on expanding a lot this year.
And he's working out of a house.
Oh, yeah. He's working out of a house. And I want to say California right now.
It sounds about right.
Yeah. And because honestly, I'll just say this. When corporations tell me they're going to do something in a couple of years, I take for granted they're lying through their teeth and they're trying to make shareholders happy and make investors happy. This is one guy with the goal of, and he's open sourcing most of the technology. That's the other thing.
I thought it was all open source.
There are a couple key binaries, he said, right now that are still closed. We're working on that, he said. But that's the key. He said, you know, you don't like what I'm doing? Fine. Take my code, make it better. Beat me to the punch. Show me how to do it. Instead of every other company out there, which is hoarding and hiding all of their technology, promising the world and just not really coming through as of yet. But he did admit, he said Tesla will be the first one with level 4 access. The difference is his is going to cost $100,000. Right. The difference is mine's going to cost $1,000. And it's going to take me another 6 to 8 months after him.
It reminds me of Back to the Future too. Taking your older vehicle and retrofitting it to a hover car.
Right.
Exactly. Did you guys have anything else you wanted to bring to the show?
I don't, but I'm wondering if our guests are by now listening, thinking, what in the world does all of that conversation has to do with mini PCs?
Well, I can tell you. Right now, Comma AI's automated system that 99 people are driving, it's a two-part system. There's a mini computer under the dash connected ODB to the car. The other half is a custom Android device with a custom Android operating system on it. He's hoping very soon, he's waiting for Android to improve, to basically be able to release an application to be put on a normal phone that will do your driving for you.
That's awesome.
And you know, that's a mini computer.
Man.
And I, for one, welcome my robot overlords. I've been rear-ended now 3 times in like 5 years going back and forth to work, and I'm sick of it.
Did you say robot overlords?
Robot overlords.
Oh, man, that's so funny.
Whether they're Cybermen, whether, you know, whatever, I'll take them because at least they can drive better.
Well, they certainly can drive better than me. Have at it.
Yeah, me too. Rich, if people want to hook up with you, what's the easiest way?
Let's see. What is that app? No, flyingrich.com.
Very cool. I hope not Grindr. Brian, people want to hook up with you. What's the easiest way?
I say shoot an email over to Podnuts. That'd be great. I'd love it.
And what is the email address?
Brit.
I was going to say, Brian was going to say it. It's minipcshow@podnuts.com. I will say, if you have an Android device, if you would like to help us fine tune an application, if you go to the Android marketplace and search for Podnuts in Your Pocket. Yes, I said Podnuts in Your Pocket. Long time listener of the network, family member, as far as I'm concerned, Caleb Faltz made an Android app to browse all of the shows, all of the content. We're going to work on getting a contact link, hopefully, in there so people can email us directly from that app and be able to announce when shows go live. That would be a really nice feature.
And when you say live, the podcast is posted and uploaded?
And for shows that do stream live as they're being recorded, have them broadcast as well.
Oh, cool.
The goal is sooner or later, basically make every show live and then have extra stuff for the Patreon subscribers. With that, I want to thank everyone for downloading. Thank everyone for subscribing. And we will talk to everyone in about a week.
Hey, this is Martin Abando from Geeksters on the Podnuts Network. Thank you so much for listening to the show right now and supporting the Podnuts Network. We can't do it without you. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, something that tickles your fancy you want to ask us about, you can reach out to us at geeksters@podnuts.com. You can always listen to us. We're going to be here all the time trying to figure out what's going on with the world of computers. Hey, don't forget to be grown out there. Thanks, guys.